Welcome everyone to Sleep Talk. This is our first podcast and I'm delighted to be here with Martin Afaya MBE. Welcome.
Thank you.
And it's our Romantica Beds first podcast and we're just happy to have you here. But you're also now our brand ambassador as well. So welcome on board with Romantica Beds.
Thank you very much.
Martin is the greatest ever try scorer for England. And one of my heroes, so I'm kind of like a little bit nervous here sitting here today, but I think, you know, I'll let you talk a little bit more about your career and, you know, when you got to witness and so on. So yeah, I'll leave it to you.
Where did it all start for me? My journey started, I'll be 60 very soon. I'm a lot older than I look. I was born in 1965. Two immigrant parents came over from Nigeria and met outside a tube station, ironically. And before the times of social media, imagine to meet someone outside a tube station who not only spoke the same language as you, but also was from the village next door. So to come across from Nigeria and meet outside a tube station.
Brief encounter.
Yeah, brief encounter. My mum won a national scholarship competition and came over to study teaching at Ilkley College, actually, in Ilkley.
Okay. North Yorkshire.
North Yorkshire. And my dad came over to study law. Mm-hmm. And they got together, had my brother first, who then went back to Nigeria and lived through a war, the Biafran War, which went on after the British exited Nigeria. So I couldn't go back. And my sister, who was a year older than me, couldn't go back because obviously a war had already broken out. My parents, before the days of childcare, couldn't look after us during the week. So we were fostered out to foster parents. And then once they graduated and then we, you know, got the family back together. So I didn't meet my brother until I was 4 years old and he was seven. He couldn't speak English when I met my brother, Chike, my older brother. We used to take the mickey out of him because he couldn't speak English. But by the time he was 11,
yeah,
he could speak English. He passed his 11 plus and went to this school called Wolverston Hall. Mm-hmm. I, who had been speaking English all my life, didn't pass my 11 plus and only went to that school because of the sibling rule.
Because of him, yeah.
Because of him. So he always tells me that I owe it all to him, which I do, because that's where I discovered the sport of rugby. I wouldn't know anything about rugby unless I went to this school called Wolverston Hall, which was one of Inner London Educational Authority's only boarding schools. It was a grammar school, as I said, and they had a big tradition of rugby. It was a school which was set up after the Second World War to give boys from, military parents, you know, military kids or, people, school teachers. My mom was a school teacher.
Yeah.
So civil servants as well. So gave their children the chance of a, basically a public schools type education. And obviously everyone knows, rugby is a big sport in those kind of institutions. And played rugby there, enjoyed my experience of boarding at boarding school. And then I left school with the greatest qualifications, spent a lot of time playing sport, cricket as well. I was a keen cricketer, did fencing as well. Probably the first sport that I took seriously was fencing.
All right.
Strangely enough, because we had a master at the school, Mr. Ramsey, who was keen on that. But at the age of 15, that's when I remember consciously saying to myself, and I remember the actual moment, I was walking outside Bernard's house, which was the stately home where just outside Ipswich in the village of Wolverston, where it was situated. And I remember saying to myself, I'm going to be the best rugby player I can be.
At the age of 15?
At 15, and see where that journey takes me. And it's brought me to Romantic Beds. In Bradford.
Oh, well.
But I left school, as I said, tried cricket for a summer. Played at Essex with a guy called Ray East, who was a spin bowler who took me down there. I was a good all-rounder, scored a couple of hundreds for the first 11, got a few wickets, played minor counties cricket for Suffolk. and then went on to Essex, but cricket was not for me. I played my first three-day game, didn't get any runs, didn't get any wickets. My claim to fame was I did room with Nasser Hussain.
All right.
For those 3 days, but it was a long 3 days.
Who became England captain.
Went on to become England captain. And I thought to myself, I can't do this for the rest of my life. I thought, you know, I'll just carry on that journey. Because rugby union at the time was an amateur sport. You couldn't earn any money.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Roslyn Park, played there for 2 years, got to play for the Bar Bars, went out to play in the Hong Kong Sevens, played in the final trial for the first Rugby Union World Cup, scored a couple of tries outside a famous England winger called Rory Underwood.
Yes.
I think, you know, as they say, fate gives you a turn. And a guy called Doug Lawton, who was the coach of a rugby league team called Widnes, gave me a call just out of the blue. I remember it. I was sitting at home, ice in my leg. I think it was sometime in June. And I just played in the Middlesex Sevens recently. And I was just wondering what I was going to do the rest of my life. I thought I'd outgrown Roslyn Park. I was even going to take up an opportunity to go and play down in Bath and do a degree at Bath. Or I was going to go and, you know, play for a team called Wasps and potentially just, you know, get into the work environment and go that route. But, when the opportunity to play for Widnes came about, I remember my first meeting with Doug Lawton. It was in Frindsbury Park, a little way down the road from where I was living at home in Hackney. And I remember thinking to myself, whatever he says, I'm going to say no. Yeah, because I thought I want to play for England. That was
right in rugby union.
In rugby union, that was the path that I was on. And I remember after you know wining and dining me, and not that I was drinking wine, but you know, I remember him saying to me, you know, you can have anything on the menu that you want. And I just thought to myself, coming from a Nigerian home where you just get told to eat that. I only remember ever going to a restaurant in my whole childhood once. My parents took me to a Chinese restaurant and we just basically ate whatever we were given. So mm-hmm. to go to a restaurant and someone to say, you can have whatever you want, was, you know, quite seductive. And but after the meal, you know, we got, you know, close to talking turkey, as they say. And he said, you know, we can offer you, you know, X amount, like 50,000, which was a lot of money back in the 80s. And I said, no. I remember on the long walk home, I thought to myself, what am I going to do the rest of my life? And why did I turn that down?
But, so did your parents know at that time that, did you keep it from them?
So my mum was aware, you know, my dad was living in Nigeria. He moved back to Nigeria to become a chief magistrate. And my mum, you know, was sort of traveling between Nigeria and London to keep an eye on us. So in some ways I didn't have an agent. I was literally sort of navigating it all by myself, which was tough, but you know, it was teaching me some life lessons. But after saying no, I was just sort of, God, you know, I shouldn't have said no. Why did I say no? What one did I? But I thought, then I put it out of my mind. I thought, you've made a decision. Yeah, you've said no. And stick with it. So I thought to myself, yeah, I'm gonna go to Bath. And then I think about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got another phone call, and it was Doug Lawton again. He said, I've gone back to the board, and this is our final offer, 85,000. And I thought, I'm taking it. I thought I'd be a fool not to take it. He was basically putting a price on an England cap for me. You know, it turns out in hindsight, it was the right decision. If I'd have waited for rugby union to go professional, I would have had to wait for another, 8 years, by which time I was almost 30 years old. And I wouldn't have been able to achieve in that short period of time enough to, you know, create any kind of legacy.
You had an amazing first season then.
Yeah, I had an amazing first season for Widnes. Did score until my third game. I think my first game was against Halifax at Norton Park. I think my second game was actually against Bradford at the old Oddsall Stadium. And my third game was against Runcorn, a team that I don't think seem in existence now. And I remember before the game, Doug Lawton coming up to me and giving me a little pat on the back and saying, Martin, you know, I can't by a try scoring winger that doesn't score any tries. I thought, no pressure. But it seemed to do the trick because I scored two tries in that game. And I think I went on to score for 15 games consecutively and broke the first division try scoring record. So that was my first record.
44 tries, it says, for that season.
Yeah, for that season. Ridiculous. And, Chariots of Fire was born. That's the first time I'd ever seen, in a newspaper, read the words Chariots of Fire. And I remember the Daily Mirror newspaper did a photo shoot with me. They couldn't afford a chariot, so they put me in a wheelbarrow, but I was dressed in a centurion.
So you were a centurion in a wheelbarrow?
Centurion in a wheelbarrow. But yeah, that's when, sort of the legacy started. You know, obviously had 4 years.
You won the championship that year.
Yeah,
I won the championship. And you won the Man of Steel.
Won the Man of Steel.
In your first season.
Did a lot. It was on your research.
Ah, there you go.
In my first season, had a fantastic season, got picked to play for Great Britain, went on a tour to Australia, the Lions tour, where I became quite pally with a guy called Ellery Hanley. Anyone who knows anything about rugby league will know it was probably the greatest rugby league player, British rugby league player anyway of all time. Even though he hasn't scored as many tries as me, I'd still say he's the greatest rugby league player of all time, British rugby league player. And yes, got pally with Ellery, and he really did help take my game to the next level. You know, he was very much about, believing in yourself and, knowing your worth, shall I say. And, squeezing that lemon and getting the most out of your career. And, I've got a lot to thank him for. And as obviously I say, I went on to have 4 great years at Widnes and then went on to Wigan, where most people who are watching this and, in the wider sporting community, know the things.
That's where they got to
get to. Yeah, that's where I went on. Yeah. In this modern world, we talk about attention and platforms.
Yeah,
and social media. Back then, Wigan was the biggest platform to perform on as a rugby league player because they were the team who were dominating. Even though at Widnes we won the World Club Challenge, we won back-to-back championships. The big platform was the Challenge Cup. That's where you got the exposure on the BBC. That's where you wanted to be. And, Wigan, won 8 consecutive Challenge Cups back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I was part of 4 of those. And, even though at Widnes, as I said, we won lots of things. They were on Yorkshire, we'd been televised on Yorkshire TV or, the local ITV channel.
Granada,
yeah. But we didn't really have that maximum, national exposure. And you got that playing in the Challenge Cup.
Brilliant. So what's your greatest achievement then on the rugby pitch?
My greatest achievement? I do say in life, you don't get to choose what you're remembered for. I'm going to be remembered for scoring that try at Wembley in 1994 for Wigan against Leeds. And it's something that, you can't look past because, I could pick other things. I know I've scored better tries. I remember a try I scored against Wigan for Widnes, which is on YouTube.
8 yards.
In the 1989 Championship decider, which was the try that got me to Wigan. Because Maurice Lindsay, who was the Wigan director, always said to me, Martin, after I saw that try, that's when I knew I had to get you to Wigan. So that's probably the greatest try that I scored. But the try that everyone, in the country is going to remember is the try I scored for Wigan at Leeds, at Wembley against Leeds in 1994, and obviously the, my statue that sits outside Wembley is me.
Yeah, by the way, he's got a statue outside Wembley. This guy,
I get that a lot. Everywhere I go, people are like, he's got a statue, but I like it. I like the fact that I'm around to see it and for people to be ridiculed for it. Because all my friends are like, they go to watch, concerts at Wembley or they go to watch football matches. And, instead of, normally meeting outside the Bobby Moore statue, I'll meet them outside my own statue. But,
you just come meet me outside my statue.
So, I get a lot of ridicule for it now, but I'm thinking in 100 years, when I'm not here, hopefully it will still be there.
Brilliant. So that's, I'm in awe anyway. Hopefully everybody else has got a little bit of a snippet as to you know, how much of a legend you actually are, first and foremost. But the other thing that I want to say is now where with where you're at now, now you're giving back, because I know you're also doing a lot for the electric industry, the car industry, and from that side, trying to be more sustainable stuff and all of that. And now you've come on board with those guys as well. So you want to leave something behind from that sense as well?
Yes, I think being an older parent, having the statue as well, I think those things started to, and, you know, I was probably not in the best position health-wise for a little bit after I left the sport of rugby. And so it started to get me thinking about sustainability, and that's sort of my buzzword now, sustainability, whether that be my own health. Mm-hmm. I've dropped a lot of weight recently, you know, whether that means living a longer life to see the exploits of my children, who are keen sportsmen as well now. My son Tyler has recently signed as a professional rugby player for the Bath Rugby Club. And my younger son Phoenix, you know, wants to be a professional footballer, so he's on his journey as well now. So I always thought to myself, I don't want to be one of those dads who's not here anymore and your kids achieve things and they, you know, I see them sort of making these, you know, after match, you know, announcements saying, you know, that was for my dad who's not with us anymore. I said, no, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. So it started getting me thinking about health and being on that health journey. So, you know, as I said, I started to incorporate health and sustainability into my personal life, you know, walking and exercising more. And then I started to think about, you know, what would the planet be like in 20, 30 or 40 years time? Because my children's names are on my statue as well. And I thought to myself, you know, maybe when they're old, their kids might be saying, oh, that's my great, great granddad's statue and so on. And, you know, what kind of world would that be? You know, climate change. And, you know, so I bought an electric vehicle and started getting into thinking about the planet. And yeah, the opportunity to join a company called Connected Curb came about. A good friend of mine, Richard Clements, started that. And I've come on board with the Wigan Warriors to be their brand and sustainability ambassador, giving back to them, you know, helping the young players who are coming through the system to think about, you know, when they're past the system and through it, you know, what's their legacy going to be? You know, that if you go around Robin Park now, which is the training facility of the Wigan Warriors, there's pictures of me everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's pictures of other great players. You know, did a small poem, which is on the top of the door on the gym at Robin Park. And it talks about, you know, all the great players who have come through the club and the jerseys that they wore. And, you know, if you speak about the number 5 jersey, are they going to speak about your name in that number 5 jersey? Because I always, you know, me and my son Tyler always have this debate about who's the better basketball player. Is it LeBron James or is it Michael Jordan? And I always say that, you know, you can't determine whether someone's going to say you are the greatest, but you can put your name in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's all we do as sportsmen, is put your name in that conversation. When I speak to the young players, as I say, you know, the people of the Billy Boston era, you know, or the people of the Ellery Hanley era, or the people of my era, you're not going to change their opinion. You know what I mean? If you think Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time, you're not going to change it.
Yeah.
If you think LeBron is, you're not going to change it. But people will still say, you know, oh, Kobe Bryant is in there, or Magic Johnson. You'll still be in the argument, and that's what you can't deny. And I always say to people, that's what you're doing when you're going out playing. You're just trying to put your name in the conversation for greatness. You know, you're trying to communicate with people of your era so they'll put your name forward, and people who are not of your era will then still acknowledge it, because you cannot deny Billy Boston Wigan, because he scored more tries than anyone. You cannot deny people of that. And it's about changing people's mindset, of getting them in there to think to yourself, you're communicating with people and not trying to get them to understand. You know, some people may think another bed company is better than Romantica, but we know at Romantica we are putting ourselves in the conversation for sleep. And, you know, that's what it is. It's about trying to change our own mindsets and then sharing that story to get people on board, to get the conversation started, because that's what you want to do. And I know now that when I go back to Wigan and I attend games And, you know, I get little kids coming up to me, asking me about stuff. And I know that's not because they saw me, because they yeah. weren't alive. But it's yeah. because they've been, you know, spoken to by their parents, by other people around that they see. And they tell them, or they see YouTube, and you put yourself in the conversation. And that's what you're doing. You're having a conversation, you know, as I say, with people, but you're using, you know, your exploits to talk. You're not, it's not words. It's your, you know, the things you do on the pitch. So it is about getting people to think bigger, because I've changed the way that I think. And even though back then I was playing, but now I look back and I think to myself, God, yeah, the things I was doing, it's almost like you're, you know, you're writing a book, or you are creating a piece of
art,
or you you know, a piece of film. You know, it is that. Because, as I said, now life is about, you know, it's about content, isn't it? It's about getting something from the past, because, you know, back in the 1800s and the early 1900s, we didn't have, you know, we didn't footage. Have footage. Yeah. So a lot of that era missed out. But at least in my era, you know, I can communicate with, you know, the modern generation and generations to come, because we have the footage. You know, even with people like Billy Boston, it's hard for him, because, you know, they, you know, it's that grainy footage, but still we have a quality of footage from my era that I can package that up now, and we can put it onto to social platforms, so people can go wow, because, you know, that's what you're trying to do. You kind of make, you know, touch people emotionally, and that's how you get people to understand things. I always believe is to touch them emotionally first. You could try and educate people, but that comes second. You know, we make most of our decisions based on emotion. And then we justify them by the knowledge, and then the knowledge that
yes, trying to put everything around it. Okay, now going back to sleep, for instance, how important is sleep to you? What's your normal routine?
Sleep is very important. We all know that from a scientific point of view, but we know that from an emotional point of view of how we feel. You know, when you've gone to sleep and you've had a really good sleep and you wake up in the morning, you tend to think, the day is going to go well. Whether it does or not, we don't know. But as once we wake up, we look forward to that day. But anyone knows that when you go to sleep, you've had broken sleep, you've woken up in the night, you're ill, you're not been feeling well, or you're stressing about something and you don't get a good night's sleep. We know that whether that day is a success or failure, you know it's going to be tough.
And you talk about it as well to everybody.
Yes.
Everyone, how bad sleep you said.
Yeah.
Bad enough from night's sleep. That's what normally happens.
Yeah. Sleep talk doesn't only take place while you're in bed.
Yeah.
It takes place throughout the day.
Yes.
You know, you ask me, well, you know, your kids, how do you sleep? You know, or, you know, how are you in school today? Were you tired? You know, did you get good sleep? So it is the basis for a lot of...
Logic tells you that. Sleep makes a massive difference to the rest, you know, to your well-being, even recovery and so on and everything like that. Now, you've got one of our mattresses. How much of a difference has that made to you and your sleep? You know,
it's made a massive difference to everything, really. How you feel, and you think to yourself, oh, even before I'm going to go to sleep, you know that I'm going to have a good sleep tonight, you know. So it's in the moment, it's after it, and it's always also before it, you know. It's almost like you've had a hard day, I'm looking forward to getting to sleep tonight. And you're looking, so you're going to, you want to get into bed early and have a good night's sleep and continue the day, the next day. Because we always know that success in life is about consistent activity. If you have a great day, it doesn't mean that, you know, things are going to be a success. We know life, your success is based on the fact that you have a good day on good day on good day on good day. You stack it up, you know. So you want a consistent good sleep over a period of time, you know.
And do you get that?
Yes, I get that. Even though, you know, if you're away and you're in a hotel, you might have one bad night, but you always know, I'm going to get back to being at home. And, you know, in life, we don't look for perfection. You know, if you have a good sleep 80% of the time, you know, you're winning, aren't you?
Excellent.
So most of the time you do sleep at home. So even if you're, you know, you say you have that night away and it's not a great mattress, it makes you grateful for the good night's sleep that you know you're going to have. Because, like, as I say, like most things in life, you know, you can recover from, you know, one bad night for whatever that reason is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having a good mattress, being in a, you know, a good sleep environment, you know, it makes a lot of difference.
So do you have a routine before you go to bed, or do you, you know, with regards to eating, drinking times and so on, or everything like that? And how do you find that you get a better night's sleep?
I find that I get a better night's sleep if I don't eat close to going to bed. If I, you know, try and wind down before I go to bed. Yeah, just get myself in a calm situation, you know, try and relieve all stresses. I have a couple of mantras that I say over to myself, which help get me off to sleep. But I think it's just being in a calm environment. You know, don't take the day to bed. That's kind of my main focus.
Yeah.
My own fit tip. Because you can do lots of different things, and you can have lots of different types of sleep hygienes. But you know, there's going to be days where, you know, because you've been out, you will do some things. But one thing that I would say, which I try and do, is finish the day and don't take the day to bed.
Excellent. Now, it's exciting times having you on board with us, guys. So what brings you here, and what do you think we can do together with you and us?
I think that we can take talking sleep, as we talk about nutrition, we talk about mental health, we talk about relationships. I think if we can start to talk about sleep, then we'll take sleep to the next level. People will share that they had, you know, a bad night's sleep. They'll share that they did something which enabled them to have a good night's sleep. We'll talk more about sleep. And that's basically what we want to do, talk more about sleep. So that means people will be thinking more about sleep. So they'll be giving sleep, you know, a bigger section of their whole thought process and life. You know, they'll go out there, they'll think about buying a better mattress. You know, it's not something that I thought about 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's something that people should really consider. You know, what are they sleeping on? Because we all spend a lot of money on cars, we'll spend a lot of money on holidays, we'll spend a lot of money on a lot of things which are probably not as important as sleep.
Yeah, you don't spend that much time in all of them things.
But... yeah, but when you think about it, you know, in the hours of the day, how many of the hours are spent in bed? And when you stack that up over the course of your life, and then you start thinking, maybe I should spend a bit more on this, because this is probably helping to extend my life. And you know, that is the most important thing, is our health.
And hopefully we've got some exciting news for people, because we're going to collaborate and work together. You having been an outstanding athlete, and we're looking at marginal gains and ways of being at your optimum best. And sleep is highly important. So hopefully we're going to look at developing something together, aren't we, for sports people, but in general, because if you get a better night's sleep,
yeah, we're going to take the concept of sleep and really look at that with regard to people who are active. And obviously with sportsmen, they are very active. And we're going, as I said, that we talk about hydration, we talk about nutrition, we talk about exercise, we talk about weight management, we talk about mindset. And now we're going to really put sleep management in and sleep talk into the sporting arena, the active arena, and see if we can produce a product which is going to be specifically designed for active people, for sports people.
Excellent. So I'm really looking forward to that. I hope you are, and I really enjoyed talking with you today, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. And welcome on board. It's been fantastic.
It's a pleasure. Thanks. Looking forward to it.